kicked him in the shins. Hard. When he started to complain, I slouched like I was preparing to kick him again, and I would have, if necessary. From the corner of my eye, I noticed Anna lower her book just a little, and I was pretty sure I caught the barest hint of a smile. Nearing the end of group time, we were discussing the causes of America's Great Depression when Anna silently slipped a folded paper into my hand. All school kids know how to secretly pass notes, but this one surprised me. I wanted to thank her. No, I wanted to grab her shoulders and pull her into the tightest hug ever, but I didn't do either. Instead, I slipped the note between the pages of my folder and began counting the minutes until school ended. Once we were dismissed, I quickly found a quiet spot under a tree, and only then did I dare to unfold the paper. At first, what I saw made no sense. It was just a pencil drawing of an old building. Square and made entirely of brick, there were two long windows in the front, but with no glass in them except for jagged pieces in the corners. An old chimney ran up the side of the building, but the bricks were shaded darker, suggesting it was an addition to the original place. There were three ground-level window openings, too, but no door, so I might have been looking at the back of the building. That frustrated me. As hard as it would be to find any building in East Berlin, it would be nearly impossible to see the backs of them without wandering from yard to yard. Anna couldn't draw a circle, much less a building, so I knew this hadn't come from her. But there was no letter, no artist's signature, and no explanation of why I should have received it. Anna walked past me a minute later. I stuffed the picture into my folder and then caught up to her. "Nothing's changed," she said. "Please go away." "I will. I will in a minute. Just tell me about that picture." "I don't know anything about it." But she had to know something. So I touched her arm and said, "Please, Anna, then I'll leave." She stopped and I saw tears in her eyes. She looked around us and then in a voice so low I barely heard it said, "We have family in West Berlin. Someone told them about Peter's death and they sent us a letter of consolation. This picture was in that letter with your first name on it, but I don't know why or where it came from." It was from my father. I was sure of that. And while I was less certain, I thought Dominic might have done the drawing. He used to be artistic, though I had no way of knowing if he still was. I started to tell her so, but she shook her head to cut me off and said, "Don't say anything else, please. You don't want me to know why you got that." "I don't even know." She started to leave, but I added, "Anna, I want us to be friends." I thought I saw her soften just for a minute. Then her face became stone again until I barely recognized her as the girl I had once known so well. "I hid the picture before my parents saw it," she said. "But you and I both know it means something. I can't do any more favors for you, Gerda. Next time, I will tell someone." I backed away to let her leave. If she suddenly pulled a mask from her face, revealing a Stasi officer in disguise, I wouldn't have been any more surprised than I already was. Because that's who it felt like I was talking to, and who knew? Maybe I was. I looked at the drawing one more time before setting off for home. Well, not directly home. Somewhere in East Berlin, this building was waiting for me. I needed to find it. And that's where I would dig. Chapter 13. In the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. Albert Einstein, German physicist and intellectual. 3 days of searching turned up nothing. So many places came close, but something was always different from the picture. It had the wrong type of roof, or different windows, or no chimney at all. It seemed like everything built since the war looked alike, and the building in the drawing appeared older than that. About a half mile east of my school was a street of older homes, but I didn't see the one from the drawing among them. I was beginning to wonder if this building really existed, at least in East Berlin. The fourth day was another Saturday, a week since I had last seen Papa. Mama sent me to school with a loaf of bread to give to Anna's family. It wasn't much, but it was all we had to spare. And Mama wouldn't have dared offer more anyway. Anna's family was still being shamed for what Peter had done. Mama didn't want it to look like our families were that close. But Anna wasn't in school that day, and the teacher said she had complained the day before of not feeling well. So I decided to deliver the bread on my way home that afternoon. At least it gave me the opportunity to walk a different neighborhood of Berlin, and a part of me hoped that as her sorrows healed, so would our friendship. Anna met me at the door, and although she looked as healthy as anyone else, I didn't question her. If I could get away with faking sickness to skip school, I'd do it every day and not feel a hint of guilt. Before Anna slammed the door, I shoved the loaf of bread at her. "This is from my mother," I said lamely. "She thought your family might want it." She didn't seem too enthusiastic about accepting it, and though I wanted to believe the Stasi couldn't find anything wrong with my mother's simple gift, I wasn't that naive. Not anymore. But whether she wanted it or not, the bread was in Anna's hands now, and the only way she could refuse it would be to drop it on the floor or hurl it back at me. If she did, I wouldn't have much cared. All Mama had asked was that I give her the bread, not force her to keep it. Finally, Anna mumbled, "Thank you." She started to close the door, but I put a foot on the jamb to block it. "I'm sorry Peter's gone, but you shouldn't be ashamed of what he tried to do." Though I hadn't planned to say that, the words poured out of me. The thoughts had swirled in my head for so long, it was a relief to speak them, and at least I was careful to keep my voice low. He wanted a better life, a free life. You can't blame him for that, or at least I don't. "We have a good life here," Anna said. "Why wasn't it enough for him?" I explained it to her the way Fritz explained it to me long ago. "You've seen the sun, Anna. Now that you have, could you ever be content with just the stars for light? Would that be enough for you?" Anna bit her lip and her eyes darted both ways along the hallway. If anyone had been there, she'd already have shut her door on me. When she was sure that we were alone, she whispered, "The night he tried, escaping, Peter left a letter for us on his bed. The Stasi have it now, but his roommate at the university found it first and told us what it said. The final line was, 'If I don't stand for freedom, then I must sit in chains.' Is that what you believe too, Gerda?" "Of course I did. We were in chains, even if she couldn't see them. I spent 6 days a week in a school that taught me freedom was a lie, and every minute in public pretending I believed it. She knew the consequences for speaking out just as I did. Why else was Herr Kraus arrested? And there was the wall. If life was so terrible beyond it, then why force us to stay here?" But I couldn't say any of this to her. Not anymore. Anna seemed to already have the answer for her question. Her gaze hardened. "I told my parents the real people in chains are those who break our laws. They must know they're going to be caught sooner or later." Suddenly, our simple conversation began to sound like an accusation. I wasn't sure why. As far as I knew, I wasn't breaking any laws. None of the big ones, anyway. A door opened down the hallway, and I turned to see who was coming. In that instant, Anna slammed her door shut, and I became a disease again. I marched from her apartment with a few unkind phrases in mind that I wished I had said while I had the chance. She was practically quoting the state's propaganda, no better than a puppet on their string. Besides, I had only brought bread, not smuggled goods or revolutionary pamphlets. No secret messages were baked inside, and we asked for nothing in return. It was only bread, and yet she had treated me like I'd brought the plague. No. She believed something worse, that wherever I went, the Stasi would eventually follow. That was a ridiculous idea. Wasn't it? I decided to take a shortcut home, which sent me down a narrow alley that I usually avoided because of the leftover rubble from the bombings at the end of the last war. But this time, all I wanted was to get home and slam my bedroom door behind me and try to forget I had ever been friends with Anna. except where I should have turned back onto the main road, I looked farther down the alley and saw it led to the back of some other older buildings. I'd never been on this abandoned street before, yet it still felt familiar. Walking faster to keep pace with my racing heartbeat, I took in the details of one particular building. It was old and square and made of brick and looked like it would crumble if hit by a strong enough wind. Two long windows ran up the back, and a chimney going up the side was made of a darker colored brick. The three square windows at ground level were boarded up, and once I left the alley, it was easy to see why. The building now served as part of the Berlin Wall. Tall cinder block rows butted up directly against the old building, and the barbed wire emerged from the wall all the way up and over the top of the building. I could only assume the front of the building was inside the death strip, and that it was sealed up, too. Two more old buildings connected in a row to the building in front of me, then the wall continued on from there. The ground where I now stood looked like a small patch of forgotten farmland. It was infested with weeds, some that were almost as tall as me. Halfway to the road, a deep irrigation ditch supplied a small pond. Far to the left and behind the wall was a watchtower, which I knew from all my previous observations was always staffed with Grenzers, who constantly looked out for anyone getting too near the wall. But they'd need binoculars to see me well. And there didn't appear to be a border zone here, or at least nothing was marked to keep us away from the wall, and the tire tracks from the Grenzer patrols didn't look too recent. My eyes flicked back to the building in front of me as my heart pounded with possibilities. This was the place my father had wanted me to find, and something was buried inside it. I didn't know what, but the first chance I got to return with Mama's shovel, I intended to find out. Chapter 14. Who wagers nothing, he wins nothing. German proverb. My opportunity came the following morning. It was Sunday, and Mama had plans to go to church. She never invited us along, not because she didn't want us there, but because she knew the state frowned on religion. They wouldn't punish her for being in church, not directly anyway, but she thought it might somehow affect Fritz and me, another stain in our files. Fritz said he had plans to meet up with some friends, which I think included a girl named Claudia. The only things I knew about her was she sold bicycles and wore her hair in the bouffant style like young women did in the West. I overheard Fritz's friends teasing him about her, and by his reaction, it was obvious that he liked Claudia a lot. The minute he left, I hurried down to the basement of our apartment, grabbed our shovel, and left for that old building in Papa's picture. I had hoped for an uneventful walk there, but a young girl hauling a big shovel through the city is hardly inconspicuous. I hadn't even left my own block when Frau Eberhardt, a woman who lived in our apartment building, greeted me and asked, "Where are you going with that? Does your mother know what you're up to?" Frau Eberhardt always looked to me like the human version of a turkey, minus the feathers. She collected gossip like other women might collect buttons or teacups. In the West, she'd have been dismissed as a simple busybody or snooping neighbor, but behind the wall, we all knew the neighborhood tattler was as dangerous as fire. Stasi informants were paid well. I want to surprise my mother, I stammered. I found an area for a garden just a few streets away. Inwardly, I kicked myself for the way my voice had trembled as I lied, for looking anywhere but at her. No, I was supposed to be smarter than this. Papa expected more of me. Somehow knowing he would want me to lie made it easier. Frau Eberhardt's beak of a mouth pursed together as if she wasn't quite sure whether I had told the truth. I was sure she could read the deceit that was almost certainly written all over my face. But this wouldn't be my last lie. Mama often warned me that the Stasi had blanketed the country with informants. It might be a bus driver or a co-worker or even a family member. And it wouldn't have surprised me in the least if the woman I was facing ran off to the Stasi to tattle on me, if she guessed the real reason for my shovel. Finally, she smiled. A garden is a delightful surprise for any mother. But if you want me to keep your secret, then I'll expect some of your harvest. Maybe that was just polite conversation and was totally meaningless. Or maybe she wanted a bribe for her silence. I really didn't know. Either way, it presented a problem since there wasn't going to be any harvest. All I could do was avoid bumping into her again for a long time. Forever, if I could arrange it. Once I spotted the building, I did a careful check for any officers in the area. This time, fresh tire tracks ran through the crusty dirt, so I knew they had come through only last night. Hopefully, that meant they wouldn't feel the need to come back around anytime soon. I got as close to the Berlin Wall as I dared, but not because I was challenging the Grenzers. Just the opposite, in fact. I knew if any eyes looked down on this area, then the closer I stood to the wall, the better chance I would have of slipping past them unnoticed. For my own safety, I would use their barricade against them. My heart was locked in my throat as I crossed to the building, but nothing suggested that anyone had seen me. No sirens or barking dogs or soldiers shouting orders. After a tense moment, I finally allowed myself to breathe again. Like all the others around it, this building looked like an old shop that had been abandoned for longer than I'd been alive, and there was no reason for anyone to come to this out-of-the-way street. I crouched beside each of the ground-level windows and pressed at the boards, hoping for one that seemed loose. The first two windows were still boarded up tight, but the third seemed to have some give. I had to use the shovel to pry the boards loose, but I finally managed to open up a small gap, then slide through it. Once inside, I had a short jump onto a hard dirt floor. It smelled of mold and rotting wood from the floorboards above me, and the standing water in the corners probably still hadn't dried out from winter. The only light came in slivers between the wood boards across the windows and painted creepy dusty shadows. It gave me a shiver, though I couldn't be sure if that was because the room was chilly or because I was afraid. No matter how eerie this room was, I also knew full well that the boundary for the Berlin Wall ran straight through this building. If I touched the brick on the far end of this room, I would be standing within the line of the death strip. In fact, I thought the Grenzers would probably consider this entire building inside that forbidden zone. If so, then I was in the death strip now. I wanted to leave, to just climb back out the window and run to the safety of my bedroom. I never had to tell anyone about this place, and the next time I saw my father, I could just shrug at him as if I had never gotten that picture. He could go forward with his life, and I would go forward with mine. But now that I was here, I knew I couldn't do that. Papa wanted me to find this building, and he wanted me to dig here. I wasn't sure why he had chosen this place, but it was important enough to let me take the risk of standing here. It had to be good. An entire chest full of money, or better yet, fake passports that would allow us an easy slide across the border. Or something better than I could dream of. Something he believed was worth the risk to my life. A crumbling stone stairway led to the main floor above me. I poked my head up there, and printed in old paint on the wall was a faded sign that simply said, "Willkommen." In that moment, I named this place in my mind. The Welcome Building. The main floor was empty except for piles of old brick. The same brick filled every window and door opening facing onto the death strip. There was enough brick so they could have sealed up all the back openings too. Maybe they'd given up before they finished. Another stairway went to an upper level, an attic maybe. But nothing would ever get me up there where I was even more exposed. I crept back downstairs on the hunt for Papa's treasure. After choosing my starting place, I raised the shovel, stuck the tip of the blade into the dirt, and crunched my foot down on the blade's shoulder. But in the hard earth, it didn't even go down a full centimeter. I tried again, pushing harder, and even jumped on it, using all my weight to force the blade into the ground. But nothing I did made any difference. It was like digging through concrete with a spoon. I moved the shovel to a different spot and tried again, but still with no success. The same thing happened in another corner, It was quickly becoming obvious that my father hadn't buried a single thing in this basement, not unless he had done it 30 years ago, because I was convinced this hard ground hadn't been disturbed for at least that long. I tried in still another place, right in the center of the room. This time, my blade struck something metal. It rattled enough that I quickly fell to my knees to quiet the echoing vibrations. I dropped the shovel and ran my fingers along the ground, feeling for the edges of the metal. Whatever it was, it lay nearly at the surface with only a thick layer of dust to cover it. If my father was going to bury something to be kept secret from the Stasi, he could have done better than putting it right at the surface. Anyone might find it this way. Then my heart dropped as I realized another possibility. Maybe his treasure had already been discovered, and only the empty container remained. I had found the edges now, some sort of metal plank wide enough to stand on. When I brushed off the dirt, I saw grooves cut into one side and hinges on the other. This wasn't a plank, it was a door buried in the earth. Curiosity was mounting inside my chest, so much that I almost couldn't stand it. I pried the door up with the shovel and then pulled it the rest of the way open. The door was heavier than I had imagined, but I was certain that something inside it would make all the risk and effort worth it. With some effort, I got the door open. I peered down, but it led to a hole too deep to see the bottom, with a rusty metal ladder on the side that I didn't entirely trust to hold my weight. Nor did I have any interest in diving into some unknown darkness without knowing whether I could get back up again, and with nobody in the world aware of where I was. I wished I had a flashlight. I walked around it to try to get a better sense of what was down there, then happened to notice dim writing stamped onto the underneath side of the door. Luftschutzraum, an air raid shelter. There were hundreds of them all over Berlin, places built underground during the Second World War when the Allies began bombing the city. There was nothing special about them. We had one under our own apartment building, in fact. And so did Anna. So there was no reason, none at all, why my father would go to the trouble of putting anything special inside this one, so far from home. I closed up the door and even scattered dirt across it again, then did my best to erase any evidence that I had been here. Obviously, I had misunderstood my father's instructions. Whatever his meaning was with the silly dances in the picture, I couldn't understand it. Maybe there was no meaning. Maybe his dance was only a dance, and this picture was only a picture. It might not even be from him at all. If I was reading secret messages into it, that was only a sign of my boredom and desire to find some lost connection to my father. I climbed out of the basement, pulled the boards that had blocked the window back into place, and stashed the shovel beneath some rubble in the alleyway so I wouldn't have to answer any questions about it on the way home. I hadn't lost hope. No, that wasn't the right word for it. It wasn't lost because I didn't intend to try finding it again. As I walked home that morning, I simply accepted the reality that it was wrong for me to ever have had hope in the first place. Chapter 15. Who shows courage encourages others. Adolf Kolping, German priest and social reformer. The following Wednesday, two letters came to our door. The first was from Oma Gertrude, my mother's mother and the woman for whom I'd been named. For as far back as I could remember, Oma Gertrude had always been old, but over the last year she had also begun to have some health problems. The state was usually very cooperative about giving my mother time off from work to take care of Oma's needs. But Mama seemed worried this time.
"She's fallen and broken her leg," Mama said. "I'll have to stay with her for a while. Perhaps the state will give me work near her home."
"What about us?" I asked. Our family was separated enough. I didn't want Mama leaving too.
"We can take care of ourselves," Fritz offered. "School is almost out for the summer, and I've got to stay here in Berlin and work. Gerda can take care of things around the house."
"I'll come home as soon as I can." Then Mama frowned, second-guessing herself.
"You should both come with me." "No,"
Fritz and I were in agreement about that. Aside from whatever work he could find, Fritz had a girlfriend here now. And I didn't want to stay with Oma. Her house smelled like fish and there was nothing to do. So against my mother's better judgment, it was decided that we would stay in Berlin while she went to the countryside to help Oma Gertrude. None of us seemed particularly happy about the idea, but we all agreed it was our best option. The second letter was for Fritz. It was from the military, reminding him that he would turn 18 in June. By the end of that month, he would be expected to enroll for a year and a half of service. Refusing to serve, the letter clearly stated, would have serious consequences. Well, of course it would. Everything had serious consequences. Fritz's eyebrows pressed together as he read it, and I could tell that he was bothered. But even if he was, he clearly remembered, as we always did now, that the ears of the Stasi were hidden somewhere in our apartment, and so he couldn't say anything when he finished other than,
"This is a great opportunity. I can hardly wait."
Fritz wasn't as good a liar as I was, probably because he had a genuinely good heart, or a better heart than mine anyway. His attempt to sound positive came out sounding sarcastic and brittle, so I countered by saying, "I know you're excited, but we'll miss you." It sounded believable, though my sympathetic expression to him said otherwise. He smiled a thanks in return. Mama didn't appear to have noticed any difference in him or any particular strangeness in the tone of his words, but neither of us blamed her for that. She looked more tired every day, and now with the news of Oma needing care and the reminder of Fritz's military duty, I was sure Mama's mind was full of all the worries it could possibly hold. She left early to go into work and speak with her supervisor. Fritz said because of that we had some extra time too, and did I want him to walk me to school? I should have refused his offer. After all, I was plenty old enough to get myself to school, but I missed walking with Anna, and it would give us a chance to talk in private. It was a busy morning, with the street full of Trabants, the bulky, inexpensive Eastern cars that were about as reliable as snow in July. The common joke said that the best feature of any Trabant was the heater in back, which would warm your hands as you pushed it home. As we left the building, a white truck pulled up directly in front of our apartment. It looked like a delivery truck but had no markings on it at all. That alone was odd. Our building rarely received deliveries. A door opened and a man was pushed out onto the street. He fell on his hands and knees, and the second I recognized our neighbor, I darted over to help him up. "Herr Kraus?" I glanced up only long enough to see Victor, Fritz's former friend, standing in the doorway of the truck. He frowned at me and then eyed Fritz. Neither of them said a word, and Victor's expression was so cold I thought maybe he had turned to ice. Then he shut the door and the truck drove away. Herr Kraus had heavy bags under his eyes, and his hands were shaking. "Are you all right?" I asked him. "Can we send for a doctor?" He put his hands on either side of my face, and tears streamed down his cheeks.
"I never should have printed those papers," he said. "Do you hear me? I was wrong."
By then, another woman in our apartment had seen Herr Kraus. She darted forward and used her shoulders to prop him up. Fritz held out a hand and said,
"I can carry him in."
"No." The woman pushed his hand away as if he had offered poison rather than help.
"It's better for everyone if you go to school."
Her eyes darted around the street.
"Please, just go."
"It's getting worse,"
Fritz said to me when we were alone.
"People are more suspicious of us, and they keep their distance. Word is getting out that I was arrested."
Anna barely looks at me anymore. Then I shrugged. "School is out at the end of this week, though, so at least during the summer I won't have to watch her ignore me all day." Fritz stopped walking and shoved his hands in his pockets.
"There's this girl I like."
"Claudia?" He smiled at first, hearing her name, but it quickly faded away.
"Yeah. We've known each other for a long time, but just started dating a few weeks ago. I like her a lot, actually. And even asked if she'd wait for me until I got my release from the military. She said she would. Until last night. Her father doesn't want us dating anymore."
"Why not?" Fritz kicked at the ground with his foot.
The Stasi showed him my file. They suggested it wouldn't be good for Claudia to continue dating me.
I'm sorry, Fritz. My sympathy wouldn't make him feel any better, I knew that, but I felt his hurt and frustration like it was my own. He only sucked in a whistle of air and then blew it out again.
Ever since I was arrested a couple of months ago, I've tried, Goethe. Honestly, I have. I've tried to say the right things and do the right things and be whatever it is they want of me. But the more I try to do what they want, the more I understand that my life has been put on this track to failure. From now on, wherever I go, they will stand in my way. I can't win against them.
You can get Claudia back. I'm sure you can.
Maybe, but that's not why I told you.
He smiled, but it was so sad and hopeless. I'd rather have seen him frown.
The same thing is coming for you, too.
Even though he spoke quietly, his words echoed like thunder in my ears. Watching Fritz was like looking at pictures of my own life 5 years down the road. When I would be 17 and hoping to get into a university, only to be rejected. Needing to get a good job, or any job for that matter, only to be turned down. Trying to find someone I could love, only to have him pulled away from me for reasons I would never fully understand. I knew it would happen to me, because it was already happening to Fritz.
This all started when Father participated in that uprising 12 years ago,
Fritz said, and now his tone grew bitter.
He thought because he wasn't arrested that he got away with it, but he didn't. And then he spent every year since then talking to people about ideas that are considered dangerous here. He thought he got away with that too, because they were only ideas. But look at where we are now.
I started walking again, and Fritz followed along at my side. You and I have ideas too, I told him, and I don't want to become like them. I stared up at him. That's not me, Fritz, and I don't think it's you either.
No, it's not,
he said.
In fact, never mind.
In fact, what? Fritz was avoiding my eyes now, so I moved in front of him, forcing him to look at me. Tell me. He opened his mouth, then clamped it shut and walked past me. A new worry sprouted in my chest as I hurried to catch up to him. Fritz had been keeping secrets from Mama for years just to protect her. But something had changed. Now he had started keeping them from me as well. Chapter 16. Freedom lies in being bold. Robert Frost, American poet. After school, I returned to the Welcome Building. Every minute since the last time I was here had nagged at me. I'd left too quickly before. My father wanted me in that air raid shelter, and today I intended to get down there. I didn't bring the shovel in from the alley, but I did have a flashlight that I snuck into my bag and kept hidden throughout the day. I stood in the alley and kept an eye on the guards in the nearest tower. The instant they turned their backs, I ran for the building, watching them the entire time. I didn't anticipate the irrigation ditch being as full of water as it was. I almost made the jump across but still landed in mud, which slowed my run afterward. I must have made it to the building before they saw me, or else sirens would be headed my way already. But it was still too close, and even running so fast would have looked suspicious. If I was going to be on this property, I could never be stupid like that again. From now on, I would approach from the side, in the shadow of the wall. After I reached the building, it wasn't hard to squeeze between the pried-up boards, drop onto the dirt floor, and then push the boards shut. There were fresh tire tracks from Grenzers on patrol, and more could be laid before nightfall. I needed to hurry. I grabbed the flashlight from my bag, stuffed it into the waistband of my skirt, and pulled open the heavy metal door to the air raid shelter. Then I lay on my stomach and angled the flashlight downward to get an idea of what might be inside. I didn't expect ghosts or monsters to leap out at me, but at the same time, I wasn't fully ruling out that possibility either. The ladder was covered in spider webs and felt damp to the touch, but I gritted my teeth in some effort to feel more courageous, brushed off what I could reach, and then climbed down.
The room below was colder than I had expected, but then I realized that unlike some shelters, it wasn't surrounded in metal. This was really only a deep hole with a metal lid and some crates at the bottom that probably had once held emergency supplies. There was a bench at the far end and a couple of pipes that seemed to carry in fresh air from somewhere outside. The building above me was still standing, mostly, so I wondered if this room had ever been used during a raid. Probably it had, even if the Allied bombs had never landed here. Papa had been around my age during the war and described staying awake all night in the shelters, being too tired to stand but too nervous to sit. There he would wait with whatever group had gathered in the shelter, hearing the airplane engines coming and then the incredible explosions as the bombs found their targets. Most of the bombings happened late in the war, and Germany's eventual defeat was certain by then. However, the Führer, Adolf Hitler, wasn't ready to surrender and seemed content to let Germany be entirely destroyed for his stubbornness. By that time, the Allies didn't seem to care where their bombs fell. They blanketed Germany, and particularly Berlin, with destruction. My school teacher said that by the end of the war, nearly all of East Berlin had been completely destroyed. Mama said the reason East Berliners didn't fight the wall was because so many citizens considered it God's punishment for Germany's crimes in the Second World War. Maybe that was so, but God didn't seem to be punishing the West equally. And besides, the war was the crime of my grandparents' generation. I didn't see why I should be forced to share in their penance. I was too busy with my own crime anyway, that of standing in this air raid shelter. It quickly became obvious that there was no treasure in this room. If anything had ever been here, it was stolen away long ago. But Papa should have expected that. He wouldn't have sent me here for something that could so easily be taken. Besides, whatever was here, he wanted me to dig for it. The east side of the room was crowded with crates and the bench, and the dirt behind it was buffered with large rocks, so I wandered to the west side and pulled at the dirt, which crumbled in cakes in my hand. Maybe Papa had buried something inside the walls. It made sense. If the ground above me was so hard, Papa couldn't have dug there to bury anything. But he could have put something down here, just buried behind a thin wall of dirt. The wall. The Berlin Wall had to be nearly over my head right now, and I realized that even if Papa had wanted me to find something buried in this dirt, it was far too dangerous for me to dig, because every centimeter I clawed in there put me one step farther inside the death strip. If I went too far, I'd end up in the West. The truth crashed into me like I'd just tumbled through waves of the ocean. I had been wrong before. There was no treasure buried in this air raid shelter. No, the shelter itself was the treasure. Papa must have known about this shelter because maybe he had stood in this very room as a child. This was where Papa wanted me to start digging. He wanted me to tunnel into the West, to freedom, to him. Chapter 17. Forge the iron while it is hot. German proverb. I dug a little deeper with my hands, but didn't get very far before I realized this wasn't a smart way to start a tunnel. At the least, I needed the shovel and more light than what came from this small flashlight. And I couldn't walk out of here with my entire body as filthy as my hands already were. That would get me noticed by every Stasi officer in Berlin, not to mention the border guards, informants, and probably the great majority of nosy neighbors within a square kilometer of this place. Before I dug any farther, I had to have a plan. I also had to ask myself exactly how serious I was about escaping. Now that I knew what Papa wanted, I better understood just how dangerous it was for me to be standing here. I didn't have to dig or tunnel or do anything but be inside this air raid shelter to give them enough reason to arrest me, or worse. And if I started, I would have to finish, because a half-dug tunnel was no different to the Stasi than a failed escape attempt,
and my punishment would be no less severe. If I started, I was committing myself to literally do it or die, and my odds weren't exactly on the side of success. My legs were shaking when I climbed out, and I took extra time to make sure the wood boards across the window looked exactly as they did the first time I'd found them. I'd been angry when I left here before, and might have been more careless with the boards than I should have been. My footprints showed clearly in the softer part of the dirt, and Frau Eberhardt had already seen me with a shovel. I hadn't even started digging yet, and already my mistakes were mounting. I brushed over my tracks and then stuck to the hard soil instead. But I couldn't work up the nerve to dart across the empty field and into the alley. The best I could do was to slink along the edge of the wall and hope if anyone saw me that I looked casual enough to escape any further attention. But it was nearly impossible to pretend that my senses weren't focused on every detail around me. If the watchtower guards had binoculars, they might look at my hands and wonder how they'd gotten so dirty. I wished I had pockets like boys did for their pants, but my skirt didn't have any. So I hid my muddy fingers within the folds of my skirt and hoped that wouldn't look as strange or obvious to anyone else as it did to me. Every person I passed on the way home seemed to be watching me closer than usual, and the expression on my face must have invited questions. But nobody said a word. Perhaps God still granted miracles to those behind the Iron Curtain. The first thing I did after getting home was to scrub my hands until long after the water had run clean, or maybe until they had stopped shaking. When I finished, I found a note from Mama on the counter. She hoped to be at Oma Gertrude's only until Sunday, and thought that if we were careful, there should be plenty of food in the house to last Fritz and me until then. And she was very clear that we weren't to get into any trouble or break any rules. Considering where I'd just come from, her note had come too late for me. I paced the apartment for the rest of the afternoon, debating whether to tell Fritz about the tunnel. I knew I shouldn't. Tunneling under the death strip was probably impossible, and even if it wasn't, we'd still have to get through the tunnel without being shot like Anna's brother. Despite that, I couldn't stop thinking about the possibilities if I were to succeed. What would it take to build a tunnel? Lots of digging, obviously. Was I capable of all that on my own? Maybe with enough time, but there was so much I didn't know. How would I know if I was going straight, or that I was deep enough? How would I know when it was safe to tunnel back up to the surface? That'd be my luck, to tunnel straight up into the center of the death strip. Considering the limits of my own abilities, I knew I needed help. But Fritz was trying hard to be a model citizen, probably to get Claudia back, so I couldn't involve him. And there was no one else I trusted. If I was going to be smart about this, and it was about time I did something smart, then there was really only one option. Let the tunnel be a good idea that wasn't meant to happen. By the time Fritz came home, I had decided for certain not to tell him. And I knew that was the right thing to do, once I saw the slump of his shoulders and frown on his face. He looked worse than sad. It was like he'd simply accepted what the state was doing to his life. He'd given up. Maybe he had good reason to look the way he did, but it was worse because I was helpless to cheer him up. Even if I could, there was nothing encouraging I dared say to him in our bugged apartment. He mumbled a hello and said he was going to his room. I offered to make dinner, which really only meant I was going to warm up Mama's leftovers from last night. It wasn't much, but it was something. When dinner was ready, I called him to the table, but there was no answer. Even if he was seriously depressed, Fritz was never one to ignore a chance to eat. Thinking he must have fallen asleep, I went to his bedroom and opened the door to tell him to come. But he wasn't sleeping. Fritz was at his desk writing on a paper, and when his door opened, he turned it over in a blink. I didn't know hands could move that fast. My eyes narrowed. What are you doing?
Nothing.
Which was obviously a lie.
Then his eyes darted around the room as if the Stasi's secret bugs would be that easy to find.
Just a little extra homework, that's all.
Oh, right. My voice might have sounded like I agreed with him, but the expression on my face made it perfectly clear I knew something more was going on. Food's ready. We shared the usual meaningless chatter over dinner. We talked about school, about how long Mama might be at Oma Gertrude's, and about our plans for the summer. I didn't care about any of it, and neither did he. Fritz did let one piece of actual news slip into the conversation. Something I had suspected for a while but never dared ask about. He had been fired from the bricklaying job, and we both knew why.
I've tried to find other work for the summer, but nothing's turned up yet.
His voice was hopeful, but his eyes were dead. Does Mama know? Without Papa here, we counted on the money from Fritz's after-school job to get us through each year.
Mama doesn't need any more worries.
I thought again about the tunnel I could build. With his bricklaying skills, he could easily get a job in West Germany, and their money was worth 5 times the value of ours. After supper, Fritz returned to his room with strict instructions that I wasn't allowed to enter without knocking. He'd never done that before, confirming my suspicions that he had some big secrets. I would have snuck in and peeked at his papers if he left his room, but he never did. Not once. I didn't find out anything until breakfast the following morning. He came out of his room with the papers in his hand. He commented on how cold it was and that he wanted a fire. It was actually a perfect spring morning, one in which we'd never build a fire. Not unless we needed to burn Fritz's papers, of course. I told him I'd help with the fire, and after it was started, he let me see the papers. I had figured it must be some way of getting back together with Claudia, but it wasn't. What he had written was so much worse. Page 1. There's no future here for me. I'm leaving East Berlin tonight. My eyes widened and I drew in a sharp breath. He shook his head as a warning for me to keep quiet and then crumbled that page and threw it in the fire. Page 2. I found a place near the Spree that isn't well guarded. I can run for the water and swim across before I'm seen. I shook my head as violently as I dared. The Spree was a powerful river, and the Berlin Wall ran along much of its wide banks. Large, heavy boats navigated that river, and everyone knew the current was stronger than it looked on the surface. Even for an experienced swimmer, it was dangerous. For Fritz, it would mean death. Remembering the microphones, he commented that the fire should get us warm soon. I was too stunned and angry to make any response. Then he raised his pages again. Page 3. I wanted you to know so you can explain to Mama. It's not fair, but it's the best I can do. No. I continued shaking my head and tears stung my eyes. He wasn't the first to try escaping through the Spree, and so many people had died in the attempt. Either they drowned on the way, or else were shot in the back by Grenzers as they swam. Even on the small chance that Fritz got as far as jumping into the water, he wasn't likely to get out again. Page 4. I will not join their military. Eventually, I'll think like they do, and I will not let them ruin my life. You must understand, Goethe. His eyes pled with me to accept his decision, but I couldn't. Yes, I understood the desire to leave and his frustrations over feeling that there was no hope for him here. I felt just as boxed in as he did, maybe even more. There probably wasn't much hope for me either, and it would only get worse if he left me behind. I wanted to leave just as much as he did, but not in this way. Page 5. You can't stop me. My mind is made up. I am going to leave. He started to crumple up that page and toss it in the fire with the others, but this time I grabbed it and ran for a pencil. While making a lame comment to the microphones about breakfast, I smoothed the paper out again. On the back, I drew a map to the building I'd found near the wall and then pulled out the picture Papa had sent to me. On his paper, I wrote,
Meet me here after school. Be careful. Fritz looked up at me, his eyes burning with curiosity. I wrote one more word. Tunnel. Once I was sure he knew where to go, I crumpled up his paper and tossed it into the fire. Chapter 18. Start with what is right rather than what is acceptable. Franz Kafka, German author. I arrived at the building first, and despite how anxious I was to get down into the shelter and begin digging, I forced myself to wait in the basement to be sure Fritz got in safely. He approached the building the same way I had, using the shadow of the wall to hide him. I waved him in through the window, and after he slid inside, we shut the boards up again. Fritz was bigger than me, so he had separated the boards even wider, and the nails were bent. If someone really looked at this window, they might notice that the boards didn't shut tight anymore. That made me nervous, but there wasn't much we could do about it. He started to talk, but I'd already opened the heavy metal door into the air raid shelter and quietly motioned for him to follow me. The shovel was down there, too, ready to begin. Without saying a word, Fritz stood in the shelter, inspecting it just as I had a day earlier. He opened the crates, patted at the walls, and dug into the dirt to test it. His eyes ran along the ceiling, no doubt questioning where the line for the Berlin Wall should be. If we weren't beneath it already, then it couldn't be more than a meter away.
"How did you find this place?"
he asked. In a whispered voice, I told him everything. About seeing Dominic and Papa, the dance Papa did on the platform, and getting the picture from Anna. I fully expected his excitement to grow at the prospect of tunneling to freedom, to see his eyes widen the way mine had when I first realized the possibilities down here. If he planned to swim the Spree anyway, this was a much safer plan, and this offered the chance for all of us to get to the West. But instead of showing any enthusiasm, it was just the opposite. With every new revelation, his shoulders slumped further and the light dimmed in his face.
"You were young when Father left, so you didn't know him as well."
The tone in Fritz's voice was sympathetic, as if my innocence deserved his pity.
"You must have misunderstood his message, if there even was a message. Father never would have asked us to put ourselves in this much danger. Never."
"But he did, Fritz. I saw him, and you didn't."
"You saw him doing a children's dance and read meaning into it."
"Then why did he send that picture?"
"How do you know it's from him?"
In frustration, Fritz turned from me and ran a hand through his hair.
"How do you know it's not some test from the Stasi to get us here and then have a legitimate reason to arrest us?"
"They don't play games like that."
"They do, Goethe. They do that all the time. If they believe our family has some sort of rebellious streak, do you really think they'll sit back and wait for us to commit a crime when they could just trap us now? Or maybe Anna's family drew this picture to lure us here so they can turn us into the Stasi and get forgiven for what Peter did."
"Anna's family wouldn't..."
"Yes, they would. And if you want to stay naive about how dangerous this tunneling idea is, then you have no business even thinking about it. Our friends could betray us. Family members could betray us. Some stranger on the street could report us, and we'd never know who it was. There is nobody we can trust."
But he had said us. Fritz and me together.